Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we come your way. We are streamed live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast on a2zen.fm, and we archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. So you have an opportunity to hear this program on a regular basis and go back. excuse me, can I say 7 years? I guess I can. 7 years of programs. That's just with this program. I've been interviewing for nearly 35 years, which is still kind of hard to believe. I don't feel that old, and I guess that's a good thing. But I am so encouraged by the various guests that we have on the program, and I hope you are too. I hope that if you find time, maybe you will send me an email at richard@richarddugan.com and give us an idea of the things that you would like us to talk about when it comes to new paradigms, finding those new ways of living. Today is, I think, going to be a fun program. Before we get to our guest, though, I'm going to give you a quick Angus update for those of you who are interested. For those of you who are not, you can sit back and hum a few bars, and we'll be with you in just a moment. He is 10 months, 11 months old, probably still only about 90, 95 pounds. The growing has probably slowed. He's just having a grand time, and he sounds more like a monkey every day. The sounds that he makes for a King Shepherd dog, big black King Shepherd, it's kind of an amazing thing that he makes those kinds of sounds. Nonetheless, he is a lot of fun. He's a joy to have, and we're certainly glad that he is in our family. And I'm glad that you are in our family as well. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while because I've been wanting to talk to somebody. I think this is relevant to our discussion on a general basis on this program, as we have been doing it for the last 7 years. And we're going to talk about our technology. We're going to talk about our connectedness to the rest of the world and the ramifications that it brings in light of the boundaries. I was accused many years ago of talking about anything and everything in my life and that I didn't have any boundaries. But that was just basic communications. This is a different, I think it's a little different, but I think it still crosses that same line. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have access to any television or movie or radio program, or as they are called, podcasts. I call them archives. That you could possibly want. You can text message. Now most of the services provide you with unlimited texting. I am fortunate. My phone provides me with the capabilities of texting, but I verbalize it. I can speak into my phone and it prints it out. I double check the spelling and the words, and then I send it. And it makes it so much easier than trying to type because I can only do it with, I haven't figured the thumb method out yet. But today we're going to talk about the boundaries in an over-connected world, setting limits to preserve your focus, privacy, relationships, and this is my favorite word, and sanity. Yes, indeed. We have Anne Catherine on the line. Actually, she's on Skype. I joked about this before we started in terms of using the technology that we're talking about. She's the author of Boundaries, Where You End and I Begin, with over 2,500 copies sold. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Why, you're welcome. And I just want to mention that's 250,000, not 2,500.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Oh, 250,000. I moved the decimal point. My apologies.
That's all right, Richard.
And by the way, 250,000 is not as impressive as 250,000. I got to tell you that right now. Presentation is everything, as they say. Well, now, our conversation, number one, obviously, is being conducted on the internet because we're utilizing Skype to connect with you. And I do that even though every one of our guests has a different sound quality to them because they're using a different kind of miking system. Some have headsets. Some use the condenser mic on their PC or their Mac or their laptop, what have you. Either way, I find that the quality is better this way because you're clearer. I think you come across much cleaner as well. But that's a side issue to this whole issue of privacy. And I have to tell you, Anne, that in 1998, when I acquired my very first cell phone, wasn't a smartphone, it was a cell phone, And I had a PC at that time. I received my first computer in 1994. I think I was hooked up to the internet in 95. And in both of those instances, I never made the false assumption that what I was doing on my computer or the calls I was making on my cell phone, I never made the false assumption that they were private. But I have the funny feeling that a lot of people, for some reason, still make that assumption today.
They do. They go into a sort of fantasy about that when they send a personal email to the 20 members of their family, that's where it stops. And if you have a leaky Lucy, somebody with really very thin holy boundaries, who passes on, has no filter, is indiscriminate, and she takes part of your stuff and sends it on, it could reach Singapore within the hour, and you could be sworn at and targeted and Googled and get weird ads.
Mm-hmm.
It's not private. You're right. And it was sensible of you to figure that out right off the bat.
Well, I know enough about the technology that I was working for as of 1979 that any wire, electrical or otherwise, can carry a signal, whether it be, say, Morse code or voice or a video feed. And so it can also be tapped into. We used to do splicing all the time. So I guess I was lucky in that respect. And I try to tell everybody, don't even imagine that there's any privacy. The only way I think today that you and I could have any kind of a private conversation, Anne, is if we were face-to-face out in the wilderness somewhere without any of our technological tools and devices, even with batteries in them, they are still picking up signals, even if you've turned it off. They say that even if you turn a phone off, a cell phone or a smartphone, if the battery is still plugged in, and it's still powered, it's still active.
Big Brother is here.
Yeah, well, in a manner of speaking, it is, but we have let him in willingly.
We have, because we've fallen for the convenience every time.
Yeah.
And forgotten about the safety. That's one of the choices that is our individual responsibility to decide where we want to slide along that boundary continuum.
Do you remember from your childhood your very first phone number?
Yes, I do.
I do too. Not yours, mine. I can see it to this day. 254-1692. That was the phone number minus the area code. That was my phone number that I grew up with in my parents' home.
Yes.
And there was one line, and there was no such thing as call waiting or call forwarding or any of those fancy. It was a flat dial tone.
Yes.
And you didn't have party lines anymore. My dad used to tell me about that. Or you pick up the phone and you could listen in on conversations.
Yes, I've had a party line. Oh. I've even had that.
Yeah, and there you go. There, right, even before the wireless stuff, people had the capability of tuning into us. But this is more than just the NSA's efforts to eavesdrop on us. And by the way, from my perspective, and I don't know about you, from a more spiritual perspective, and I also took this tack even before computers came into vogue in the mid-90s for everybody, that what difference does it make if anybody else knows my business? God knows. The universal mind knows. Whatever label you want to put on that, it's already out there. And odds are, presently, there are about 7 billion plus people on the planet. Most of those people probably don't really care. They're too busy living their own lives.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Well, there's so much distraction on the internet, Facebook, tweets, YouTube, that the dangerous people are living other people's lives lately.
I found that. And I've shared this with people, too, that if my life were turned into a reality show,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't watch it. I have a lot of fun in my life, but it's not that interesting that I would want to spend time sitting watching me live my life. I want to be living my life. As a matter of fact, we just recently dropped DirecTV as our visual provider, if you will, visual entertainment provider. And now we use those online services through our smart TV and we select. Mm-hmm. You know, now we may not find out right away about or get to see on the day that they're aired on the networks some of these shows. But I've often asked myself the question, why does that matter? Breaking Bad, for example, I'm sure you are aware of if you haven't watched. And the final episode came out. And I, of course, went online to try to find every source I could to see if I could watch it on that Sunday evening locally here in California. Couldn't find it. I ended up finding someone who had a DVD copy of it 3 or 4 or 5 days later. Well, guess what? It was just fine. You know,
it was just as good as if you'd seen it 5 days earlier.
Yeah. Our instant gratification aspect is also part of this conversation, too. Now, you've already mentioned a couple of things that I think are very important to take a look at. I mean, obviously, there are other social networking sites out there besides just the Facebook and the Twitter. I mean, there's LinkedIn, and I mean, we could go down the list of many other lesser sites and services, dating services, reunion through class reunion type things through your high school, and those types of things. And I guess one of the reasons why I don't have a Facebook page, and I rarely monitor the Twitter account that I have, is because I have a website. And if there's anything that I want anybody to know, I'll put it there. When it comes to these social networking sites specifically, would you agree or disagree that there's anything but anything really social about it?
That's one of my concerns, is that this is distant. These are distant relationships, just like texting and tweeting are also. Especially young people are having more distance relationships than they are face-to-face, one-to-one, in front of each other, talking with actual words.
Let's define the word relationship. Because okay. I wonder, and I'm going to ask you what your definition is, and are these really relationships or are they just acquaintances? So let's define, what is Anne Catherine's definition of relationship?
It is a connection with somebody you actually know and can see and have talked to in person. And of course, there's a great continuum from just someone you know to speak to, like a neighbor who lives 3 blocks away versus the person you love more than anyone else in your life, your mate or your children. So a relationship falls along that continuum, but they all involve direct contact. Below that, we have acquaintances, and below that, strangers. So many of the friends on Facebook are, of course, strangers that you don't actually know.
I know that with LinkedIn, there's a feature. This, and it's kind of like, sorry for that, the word like or friend on the Facebook site, since it's the most popular, and a lot of us know that those terms. That I get emails from people on LinkedIn who want me to endorse them, and I have a standard email that I copy into and send to them, basically saying that your request is irrelevant. You don't know me. I don't know you yet. And for you to ask me to recommend you or endorse you, there is no value in that.
And especially when everybody knows that's what's going on.
Yeah. And so I don't do it. And I haven't done it. And I'm perplexed at those who do it for me. Because some of them I've never heard of before. And unless they've been to the website and listed, you know, radio show host or, you know, some of those kinds of things, copywriter, where have you seen me and my work as a copywriter? Those kinds of things. So I find that those kinds of questions that people put out via those methods, I'm thinking of Stephen Colbert's word, truthiness.
Interesting word.
And it's not. None of this stuff isn't even close to truth. Now, when I first got on the internet, I was told not to believe anything that I read on the internet because there were so many crazies out there, even back 20 years ago, 18 to 20 years ago. And yet there are more websites now than ever before. You don't hear that warning so much anymore, but what is your perspective in terms of, can we put it in percentages? How much of what I see and or read on the internet can I truly trust?
I'd say only that which you can investigate or has a good track record. You can, with almost anything on the web, on the internet, find, if they're really, really bad, there will be other, you can Google that whatever, and you can find a website that tells how they're really, really bad. So I don't have percentages on that. It's the important thing to realize about the internet, that some of it's reality and some of it's not, and I have an example of that. I went to a computer store to get a new computer, and while we were looking at the various features, I asked the salesman, "Where's the cloud?" He looked over his head into the sky and said, "Well, it's up there somewhere." I said, "No, I mean, where is the cloud physically located?" And he again looked over his head through the ceiling and said, "Well, it's just up there." I said, "There's a building somewhere that has computers and servers. And everything that goes into the cloud reaches that in some way. Where is that building?" He said, "Oh, I'll have to go ask somebody." So there's an example of buying the metaphor and thinking the metaphor is the reality.
Well, the question has been often asked. I remember when my wife put this to me, where is the internet? Where does it begin?
Mm-hmm.
And where does it end?
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way that it has been designed, you could ask the same question of a spider's web. However, it does have a beginning. If you were to be there at the beginning of the creation of that spider web by that very spider, you would see where it would begin.
Mm-hmm. And you could come to my yard and study that all you want, because I have a lot of spiders outside. But it is what you're talking about is quantifying or trying to find the beginning of a string or the beginning of the universe even.
Yeah.
That's part of why it looks and feels so boundaryless, because it is so hard to find any boundaries in cyberspace. So it's up to you to set your own boundaries so that you make a space inside your own body and your own life so that you can detect what's good for you and not get led by breadcrumbs into the enchanted forest and lose an hour, 2 hours, lose time with your kids or your loved ones.
That's what boundaries do. Is that probably one of the greatest resources, as from your perspective, that we as a society have lost, is time?
That's one of my concerns. If you hear yourself saying, "I'll be there in 5 minutes," and then you're not there for an hour or two, or if you hear your kids saying, "Daddy, are you ever going to come and be with us?" then that's a sign you have squandered time that belongs to your family. The other thing is, are you led away from what really matters to you? Not just people, but the activities. If you set out in the morning, you have a list of what you want to do, 3 things on your list, and they're important to you. And then you go check your email, and your email leads you to YouTube, and your YouTube leads to something else, maybe 6 or 7 different videos of subjects you weren't even interested in yesterday. And you only get one of those things on your list done. That's a sign. The internet is taking precious time away from your own life.
Well, one of the things that I can share with you is when we dropped DirecTV and went to these other services, that are available online for on demand, and we also have the DVD mailed to us as well. The one thing that I found was that we were more selective, whereas before we were flipping through, at the time, 185 channels. Now, not all 185 channels did I go through, because I wouldn't even go near the Spanish channels, the children's channels, the religious channels. I mean, there were certain channels I knew where I wanted to spend most of my time searching. But that's what I was doing, flipping around, just looking for something to watch. But with this all, go ahead.
Well, I can totally relate to that. We got rid of our TV also, network TV, and we took charge of what we watched. We have some special programs. We watch those. That's it. And what we noticed about that is we didn't feel pressured anymore. We used to build up so many things on the DVD because we're very busy people that by the weekend we'd have 20 or 30 shows to catch up, and we'd feel like, oh, we got to watch it. We got to get it before it expires or before it gets full. And when we got rid of that, we had no idea how much that DVD was controlling us and how free we felt when we stopped watching network TV.
Well, you think about it, those services that you're using now are storing the very shows that you were on your DVD before.
Yes, and also, there's no time limit, but also, we too found that we got much more selective. There, we watch a couple of those shows, then we're done.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to give you a dollar figure, and I calculated this out. Based upon what we were paying over the course of the last 7.5 years, we had spent, are you ready for this? $11,000.
Wow.
$11,000. And when you think about the time that you spent, and then you put the equation in there of the money, I think about all of the things that we could have done over the course of the last 7 years, or saved that money.
Exactly.
And bought some of the big ticket items that we want to make our lives nicer, you know, not necessarily convenience items. There's some things that we're looking at for the future in that regard. And ever since we've dropped that service, we actually find that there's less pressure in terms of time when we're outside playing. For example, I gave that little Angus update. We go outside with our two dogs and play, and he's a soccer dog. He loves chasing his soccer ball, bringing it around, and just having a grand time. And we kick it around with him. And we're out there sometimes for 45 minutes to an hour, whereas before, maybe we were out there 20 to 30 minutes.
Especially if you had to get in before a show started.
Yeah, exactly.
I have another figure for you to think about. What's a minute of your life worth?
Ooh.
50 cents, a dollar? Is an hour of your life worth $60 or $30?
Wow.
Then what's a day worth? So when you're wasting 4 hours roaming through the internet, how much have you lost?
Yeah.
$240 of your life. And when you think about what really matters to you, and say you let another year go by before you get to it, or maybe it's delayed or detoured because of all this time spent on the computer, and so it's 5 years before you get started on what you really want to do. How much is that costing you?
Yeah. Well, I can say also, too, and as far as the selectivity, we have watched some documentaries we would not have watched.
Yes.
I actually went online and searched for some movies that I'd heard about, some documentaries and others that I thought would be interesting for the two of us, and so forth. And I find that in spite of the fact that we're still watching quote unquote television at night, there are things that we want to watch that we're interested in. And my wife has taken it upon herself to watch the programs that she likes, that she knows I'm not a real fan of, when I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to do that. Whereas before, when the show came on, honestly, I would leave the room because I just wasn't interested in those programs.
Mm-hmm. And so you get more together time when you're both available.
Exactly. And so it's really interesting. And so we've made those adjustments. Now, I am not putting any of this on anybody else that you all have to go out and drop your network provider, whether it's Direct or Dish or Cox or Comcast or whoever it is. I'm not saying that. I'm asking you to consider, how different would your life be? Look how different your life is now with that, and you didn't have it. I mean, I remember growing up with the three networks.
Right.
You know, in the 60s. And then I think we had three networks and a local channel, a local station.
I remember when we had two, and ABC was the new kid on the block.
Well, I find that one of the things that I'm noticing, and maybe you're noticing this too, Anne, is that our society is changing.
It is. It worries me.
And it's not just that technology is forcing it, but there are people who are, like yourself, it sounds like you are teaching people how to, I don't want to use the word control, but maybe that's the best word. You're learning how to control the technology instead of the technology controlling you.
Well, that's exactly right. It's been an avalanche, and the next new thing is on us before we've really learned to handle the previous 25 things. And it's coming from so many directions that we feel inundated.
Yeah.
So I just want to tell people that anything that is feeling chaotic and out of control in your life right now can be helped by setting the right boundary.
There will be those who will be wondering why I haven't asked the question. So I'm going to ask it now. Why does any of this matter to Anne Catherine? What happened, Anne, that caused you to do this rather than take up, I don't know, drinking or or some other activity to cope with the inundation of technology?
Well, my whole interest in boundaries started way back when one of my clients who'd been abused as a child, I could tell she had no clue as to what a boundary was. So I wrote a little 50-page thing just for her. And when I told my publisher, he was all over it. He said, send that to me. Send me 150 more pages. And I said to him, I don't know more than 50 pages worth. Well, of course, then I began studying and paying attention. But I began to see that as little known as boundaries were at the time, they're really the key to creating the path for your own life. Good boundaries fence out the things that would get in the way of your special life path, and they create an interstate for you. So then now with all the technology that came in, even people who were very disciplined were getting diverted with the avalanche of forwards and emails and now texts coming in. And then, the life-threatening aspects of some of the online statistics, and then of texting and cell phones when you're driving. So then it became important for survival to know where to set those limits.
Well, I do find all of this, I'm sure as you can tell, I find all this very fascinating. It's to me extraordinary that we've survived this far as a society, with all of these distractions. It's quite evident, and I've experienced this. And fortunately, I have discontinued any kind of practice. I have never ever texted, even verbally, while I've been driving. However, I have looked over to start a recording, or have my phone set up on the stereo system in the car so that it acts like a speakerphone. So I have hands free. But I still have to look over to swipe the screen to answer the call.
Exactly. Have you ever timed yourself to see how long it takes to do that maneuver?
You know, I haven't.
So it'd be interesting to time it. And then as you're driving, notice in that same period of time, how much road do you go over?
Yes. That's a very
good
point.
Then I'm going to say another thing that I don't mean as a criticism, it's just information, that even with hands-free use of a telephone in the car, 30% less of your brain is available for driving.
Now, I'm curious, is it still the same 30% that's unavailable for driving if you're having a conversation with someone in the car?
No, there's a strange kind of focus that comes over us when we're on a phone. It's like there's a way we stop seeing what's in front of us. Notice you when you're driving, or just notice when you're on the phone not driving. Your vision recedes from the environment around you and it goes inner.
Huh. I'm gonna pay closer attention to that the next time I'm in the car and I get a call. That I've heard about that in terms of there's still the distraction factor, even if you have hands free. Mm-hmm. It's really in one sense not any safer. So I'm gonna have to observe that. I really am.
Yes.
My guest is Ann Catherine. She is the author of, part of a trilogy, Boundaries in an Overconnected World. We'd like to unconnect from time to time, I'm sure. Setting Limits to Preserve Your Focus, Privacy, Relationships, and Sanity. There's something we might talk about, too. How can we be sure we are sane in any way, shape, or form? We're going to find out a little bit more about that as well as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we have on the phones, on the Skype, actually. That's another thing, Ann Catherine, author of Boundaries in an Overconnected World. The terminology has changed to the extent that I can't say I have you on the phone because I have you... through software that allows the two of us to communicate over this invisible internet, even though there are wires and those kinds of things. And that's, to me, I keep hearing, like I mentioned at the beginning of the program about where these programs are available, I call them archives. And yet many other people call them podcasts and other names. A rose by any other name is still a rose.
Well, we still dial phones, and we don't say, I'm going to press your number.
Right.
There was a pause there. But we actually press the buttons nowadays. We don't dial anymore, but we can still use that word and still do.
Yeah. Well, with Skype, it's a little different in that respect, but still the same basic principle. That was also something that someone said to me, that man... has not created or has not discovered, created, invented any new, and they made this interesting distinction, any new innovations to our world. In other words, you and I were still communicating, and we just talked about the terminology dial on Skype. But we're still doing the same thing. So it's like we're using different tools, but we're still communicating from long distances. So, but when the telephone was invented, or let's say the Morse code was invented and you had wires strung and you were able to communicate from long distance, that was an innovation. Everything after it is not. It's just an improvement, if you will, or an upgrade to what we've always been doing. The airplane was an innovation. Everything since then has just been an upgrade. So we really haven't, in one sense, I mean, think about this, because a lot of people, that's how they gauge maybe a society's progression, that they have come up with new innovations for living. Would you make that kind of an assessment too, that we really haven't come too far in spite of our technology?
Well, the real innovation would be if we got better and better at talking to each other, at resolving differences, at knowing what to do when we feel like retaliating. Now, those would be innovations.
I could go with you on that one. I've often thought about that. A lot of folks are still very sore from 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I remember the morning I'm watching these images, and I was living in Phoenix at the time. And I said, we have to handle this differently. Well, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
When the situation more recently in I can't even remember the name of the country now, that in Africa that they're having all these problems and they used chemical weapons, and then we threatened to do this to them because they did this with chemical weapons. I said, no, that, how is that, how does that help? How does that resolve anything? You know? And that's where we come up with the new paradigms for a new world, is trying to find those new ways of living, those new ways of doing things. And it sounds to me like it's people like you who are sort of at the forefront in that regard. Can you give us, because the work that you have done over the last 40 odd years to give people tools to better their lives, can you talk about some of the processes or steps, if you will, that you have offered people in that regard?
Well, in the book itself, there are steps to learning how to set a boundary and steps to know when your boundaries have been violated. So some examples, well, a lot of examples like that are in the book. The first step, in my way of thinking, is to create enough of a boundary that you have some time and space where you are not interruptible and think about what matters to you most. Until you are really sure about what that is, you don't know where you want to go. And the skills that are involved are skills that we can learn and skills that we can teach. So, for example, it's so important to make it easy for your kids to come to you and talk to you. There are so many dangers on the internet. And I won't scare you with all the various statistics, but 1 in 5 to 7 children are sexually solicited, and 75% of solicitors asked to meet the youth in person, 34% called them on the phone, and 18% came to their homes. And if you think, well, I'm paying attention, I know what's going on in my home, and my kids tell me everything, most of the kids did not come to their parents about this. So interpersonal skills should start young, hopefully. And in the book, there are discussion questions and links to discussion questions that you can use to start talking about with your kids about all manner of dangers on the internet. And also it talks about the most important parenting skill that makes it possible for your kids to talk to you.
It sounds to me like the aspect of communication is still the paramount, the focal point, if you will, in terms of setting things up in this nature. And the communication that is, sounds to me from your perspective, that is not is not using the middleman of technology to do so.
Exactly.
This is not something that you text or email to your kids as far as a communication.
That's right. Match the medium to the message. Use the device that's appropriate. I've got a grid about that. So if you're not sure, you can tell. You can just say, go across this line and come down this column, and you can know what device you should use for which purpose. The development of interpersonal skills like empathy, how to negotiate, how to manage anger, how to listen, these can't be done through texting. Texting is the briefest possible way of getting your message across, so it doesn't involve a huge part of your whole persona. But did you know that two smartphones got married?
No, I hadn't heard that.
They got new rings and great reception. Just a little break in all the heaviness.
I love that. I love that. I am again most fascinated. I remember back in the early 90s, before I was introduced to computers, that a friend of mine, a good friend of mine at that time, shared with me his love of computers. And he says, when you find out about these things, you are going to love it. Well, my biggest fear was there was some place on the keyboard where there was this red button and it was hidden somewhere, and that I would hit it and blow up the computer and ruin everything, right? Well, once I got over that, and it didn't take too long, I was actually building them. I have no formal training in computer technology. But back then, you would buy the peripherals, the various parts, mm-hmm. and you could put it together. And I was a model builder from a very early age, mm-hmm. and I loved doing that. And so it was just a big model that worked, or at least I hoped it worked once I put it together. There were times when it didn't. But I was – and then, of course, there was the concern. And believe it or not, I actually had this concern early on about it's disconnecting me from my first wife and my family, my parents and siblings and so on and so forth. And I know that when my father got involved with computers, my mother was concerned about that too, because he did spend an inordinate amount of time, but he was going to junior college, re-educating himself in computer programming. So I remember the big fanfold paper and the punch cards. He would bring those home. But he also developed, I think with my mother's help, developed a balance. I was so concerned about the disconnect that I think I really consciously took control and tried to maintain a balance. But I had those moments, like you described earlier in the program. I'm just going to go on here for 5 minutes, check my email and blah, 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 blah. And 3 hours later.
Easily.
Yeah. And so time certainly can get away from you, even if you're doing something that is very productive. And I would do production and editing. When I learned how to do that, I thought, oh, man, this is going to go much faster. Well, it didn't. But what it did was it made it more precise, which was also a good thing. So my introduction to technology from that standpoint started in my early 30s and has brought me here to today, where I now have a smartphone that I can literally access the computers at the radio station if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I don't, because the screen is too darn small and I can make too many mistakes with, you know, big fingers and a small screen kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I know that a lot of people are learning these kinds of things. There's also etiquette that we might talk a little bit about.
Right.
And from that standpoint, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the process that we might want to take with our associates, acquaintances, whatever you want to call them, in terms of the lack of etiquette when it comes to especially using cell phones, smartphones, you're texting while you're walking kind of thing. I've had experiences where I've wanted to say something to somebody as I'm walking down the street and they're walking towards me with their head down and I want to stop right in front of them and say, choose one or the other, text or walk. Mm-hmm. I don't want to threaten them or else, but it's like focus on one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of the basics of etiquette when it comes to our technology and our connectedness.
Well, you hit on a couple right there. And one is that to give yourself the gift of having the whole experience so that you're not violating the boundaries of important experiences. I had an example of that in a restaurant with a couple behind me were having an anniversary dinner. They were celebrating their anniversary. They were each on their individual phones the whole dinner. That was a bonding time. But he was talking to his friend about football. She was talking to her friend about a shoe sale. And that bonding time was lost. So I have some examples in the book about how to set a boundary in all these different situations, how to protect your focus, and etiquette in chat rooms, etiquette at work, computer etiquette with emails and texts, so that you are building, not tearing down, in whichever setting you're in.
Well, I know that as we go through our day to days, trying to, you know, make sense of all of this. And in spite of the fact that many of us, Ann, have become pretty darn proficient at some of this technology and some of this connectedness, I have to wonder, do you, I don't know if you have any statistics or any information on the lack of quality productivity when we are so, our attention is so divided.
That's right. It's creating for us a multitasking situation where we expect to be interrupted, which means we work at a more shallow level. We hesitate to go very deep in our thinking or in our work because anything could be pinging into us at any time if we don't set boundaries.
So how would one, I don't want to use the word disconnect, but better focus. How would one do that? And is this going to be a hard process to?
Go ahead. It's actually easy. If you give yourself room to have a learning curve, so just know that you might be clumsy at first, and then the more you practice it, the better it gets, and the better you get, and the more graceful you get. And also notice, even when you set your first boundary, even if it's sort of clumsy, just notice what you bought with that. Notice how it feels to have bought yourself some time or space. With a friend, for example, who we got together pretty routinely, and she always had her phone on, and if anybody texted her or called her, she would answer it. And I finally said, I really value our relationship. And when I'm with you, I want to be with you. Are you interested in growing our relationship? She said she was. So I said, would you be willing, while we're together, to turn off your phone and not answer texts and not even read them? That's an example of setting a gentle boundary. And then if she says no, you've learned something about how far your relationship can go. If she says yes, then you can both notice, what difference does that make?
Yeah, I I've been going through all these different transformational processes with this new technology. And again, as you've very well stated, it changes so fast that we don't have time to get used to the other stuff that's out there. And I know a lot of people, they feel the need to have the latest and the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
I had a flip phone when they weren't fashionable anymore, but it worked for me. It just did. Mm-hmm. Then when the radio station that I work for began to stream and had all of the necessary tech software to allow the smartphones to access the stream so that you could monitor I could monitor the station. Well, it was then time to upgrade to the smartphone that allowed me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I still see the newest phones out there, newer than the one that I have. Obviously, every week a newer one than I have comes out. But I like what I've got, and it seems to work for me just fine. And I keep thinking, why is it necessary for me to upgrade?
Well, you've hit on a very good question, discovering that it isn't necessary. If you're satisfied with the setup you've got, you can just stay right there until some situation changes that you need some advanced thing.
I'm curious as to, now, do you run a PC or a Mac?
A Mac.
So I don't know what levels of operating systems there are with the Apple computers. I am still running with a computer I bought back in 2006, the summer of 2006 when we moved. And it had Windows XP installed on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working with it just fine, thank you very much. I never went to Vista, and I have no desire to go to 7. Even though we use 7 at work and I like it, mm-hmm. because if I go to 7, I have to buy the entire piece of software. There is no upgrade. Mm-hmm. And then I have to reinstall, of course, is a lot easier than it used to be, but still, you know, that takes some time, especially with the software that I am working with and the various programs that I need to be able to be functional for both the radio station as well as doing voiceover work and production and those kinds of things. We use, and again, a lot of this technology has brought new terminology into our common lexicon. Like using 1.0 or 2.0 to describe the lack of functionality, if you will, or new innovations in the workplace or at home or something like that, or changes that I may have made in my, I'm Richard Dugan 2.0 now. You know, I'm not saying I am. I'm just using that as the example.
Yeah, right.
Are there any aspects of all of this that have taken you by surprise in this process, and when you've, as you've compiled these works and gone through this, these therapy sessions with people over the years?
Well, I think one of the ones that has most surprised me most were the statistics about kids playing violent games. The that violent games actually change a child's takes away a child's empathy, makes them more aggressive. And there's a really good case that for playing a lot of video violent games online or with videos, with a few other factors, are predictors of violence in schools, school shootings, that it's a way of training children to follow behavioral scripts that end in killing.
I don't know if you've heard this statistic or not, but I heard a news report just recently that says that the video game manufacturers have actually found a way to program their games to make them more addictive.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They have done that.
It seems like a throwback to the 50s when they used to throw one frame per second into the films.
The subliminal stimulation.
Exactly.
Yeah, to make them go buy popcorn.
I'm wondering, do you see, I'm not sure this is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but do you see anybody concerned about this to the point where they're thinking about passing a law saying, no, you cannot do that to make your games more addictive?
It ought to be. I don't think I don't think there's widespread understanding of the mechanics of this. That's why I devoted a whole chapter to this, just to give some statistics that 80% of the violence portrayed in contemporary music videos is perpetrated by attractive people against minorities, that the amount of violence with intent to injure has increased through the years. And then the statistics on kids that I'm trying to pull this up real quick. Kids are influenced by media. They learn by observing, imitating, and making behaviors their own. And aggressive attitudes and behaviors are learned by imitating observed models. Kids of all ages are becoming desensitized to another person's pain. Families will watch TV as they eat dinner, gnawing on pizza while someone on screen is being killed.
I'm hoping I'm at the right place here because it's on the information that was sent to me. So I put it into the address window and hit enter. And it took me to a rather nice, serene scene. And it is 1annkatherine.com, Your Cherished Life. And it's this beautiful lake, it appears to be a lake, and Mount Green hills in the foreground and mountains in the background. And it's just, it's like, gee, how can I get there? quickly. So what I am seeing is an opportunity for people through the work that you have done and the work and the books that you've written and the the therapy that you've taken many people through to find a place like this, maybe not literally, but to take time to disconnect from all of the connections. Do you find in the work that you're doing that that seems to be a difficult thing for people to do?
When you mentioned addiction, if they're addicted and they need those brain chemicals stimulated by the stimulation from online activities, it's more difficult. And I've noticed that you appear not to have that you are very good at pausing and taking stock and not being swept along. And that's what I hope everyone will do, to pause and take stock and pay attention to how much it's costing you in life minutes and money to be however involved you are. I'm not saying get rid of things, get rid of electronic things. We've already passed a point where these are the tools that we're going to have, and we're going to have more like them that are ever more entrancing. But I am saying pause. Make space inside your own body. Save your energy for your own use. Protect your important relationships. Wall out toxic people and events. And you can do all of that with boundaries.
I'm at your website right now, and I'm on a page called, let's see if I can find the name of the page here. Well, actually, the page is For Fun.
Yes.
And basically, inhabit your cherished life. You can use this poll to discover where a boundary could improve your efficiency and satisfaction. Pick one of the tasks you plan to do today, and then note each time you are interrupted. Then come back to this page and select the correct range, whether it's 1 to 3 times, 4 to 9, 10 to 15, 15 to 20. I was interrupted more than 20 times, and obviously then you'd select the vote, you'd click the vote button. And then to find out how to set a boundary to protect your productivity, obviously it would be suggested to pick up a copy of Boundaries in an Unconnected World. And Catherine is my guest, and I think that this is, I think, a good test for people. Now, when I'm doing these interviews, my phone is on silent, so I don't even know if a call or an email or a text is coming in, and it's face down. And yet, it used to be that I would be checking from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people do that a lot. I have links on my phone as well as tabs on my browser and my computers. I can go check whatever it is that I want to check, of a personal nature. I can go check my bank account. And I'm on it. That's something else that maybe we'll talk a little bit about real quickly before we wrap up the program. In terms of monitoring the various, I call them providers. In my case, for example, my financial institution. And I have a link to that account. And I check it periodically throughout the day because I don't want to be surprised. I know some people, they don't check it for days. And they have no clue, not just how much money they have in their account, but what kind of activity is going on. So if somebody was trying to drain my account, I'm going to know about it really fast. What about someone who, I don't consider myself obsessed over it, but I don't know, maybe I am, in terms of, monitoring those kinds of things?
It's important to be taking authority over anything that you operate online that involves money. So that's a good thing to do. The other thing is, in your case, that when you sign out, don't leave yourself signed in. When you sign out from your bank account, then close that file on your browser, and then close your browser. And if you've set your privacy and security settings on your browser to get rid of cookies or to not accept tracking devices, you'll eliminate those when you restart.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll come back to a clean slate, and wherever you go next after you've been to your bank, that won't be tracked.
Right. Well, I think that it's, as you say, I think it is important to keep track. I get kind of kidded at work if they see that up on my screen. It's not a problem at work to do that, but I get chided because I'm constantly, as from their perspective, I'm constantly checking. And it's just because they see that page up before I've closed the browser and so forth. But it's more, I'm trying to be proactive.
Yes, that's good to monitor that.
Yeah.
To monitor anything that where there's a financial gain for some unknown person.
Yeah.
And you're illustrating the point that your coworkers have are on a different place on the boundary continuum than you are. And that is the point, that we each make our own personal decision of where we want to be, between the extreme of total safety, or as much as you can possibly get, versus as much convenience as you can possibly get.
You have a book titled Where to Draw the Line.
Yes.
How to Set Healthy Boundaries Every Day. Now, I use that same line in terms of various skirmishes, conflicts, disagreements, what have you. And I always say, okay, so where are you going to draw the line? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, and who is going to draw it?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that that is an extremely important question to ask, because drawing the line, that's great. But if it isn't you drawing the line for your boundaries, then somebody else is doing it.
That's right. You're in charge of protecting yourself, protecting your own life.
Before we wrap up the program, who is Ann Catherine?
I would say that I'm my mission in part, in large part, and that my mission is to make it possible for other people to work toward or be moving toward their own missions.
Their own purpose in life.
Yes.
So that sort of answers my second question, and that is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
That's my goal.
Okay.
I think one of the causes of unrest in the world is people having been sidetracked by one thing or another from their personal missions. There are lessons for us to learn. We're here for a reason. And taking the time to figure that out, and it can take years, but every time we work on that, we move ourselves closer. And then taking charge of moving in that direction and not and getting rid of distractions or detours, that's our purpose for breathing. And it's I've seen people have come all the way almost to the end of their lives, and they only then started paying attention. When you're at the end of your life, you look back on your life, it seems to have gone very fast. It doesn't seem fast when you're in it, but it seems very fast when you're near the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
And you think, oh, my God, look at all the time I wasted. So my hope is that people will use my books as tools to not waste time.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation here today. And finally, how powerful are we as human beings?
I think we're very powerful if we don't give it away. And that's part of what a boundary will do. It'll protect your power and your energy and keep it for your own use.
I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and the work that you're doing with us here on the program. And I look forward to staying in touch with you and talking further in the coming year as well.
That would be lovely, Richard. I am very glad that I've been here with you today.
And let me remind our listeners that we've been talking with Ann Catherine. She's the author of many books, but one in particular we've been talking about has been Boundaries in an Unconnected... Over... I keep saying unconnected. That's I think that's my desire, is to unconnect.
I think so too.
It's actually, the title is Boundaries in an Overconnected World, Setting Limits to Preserve Your Focus, Privacy, Relationships, and Sanity. And she's also the author of Boundaries, Where Do You End and I Begin? And that would take up a whole nother program as well, with a quarter of a million copies out there as well. I'd love to have you back. Maybe we'll talk about that as well, because I think that even when you push technology aside, I think that people are looking for space for themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, my wife and I, we are very fortunate because we live up above the city, up in a rural area, and the closest neighbor is probably, I'm going to say, 1,000 yards away. And there's only one way to get to our little slice of heaven, if you will. And unless you know how to get there, I would have to give you directions because it's not easily found. So it's kind of nice to have that level of isolation or even seclusion. But there are people who are boxed in, one on top of another, of each other. So this would be a subject, for another program that we could talk about as well. So thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Richard, for having me here today.
And I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.